ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। After discussing few emotions, how to convert the frail form of emotions into a pillar of strength, from attachment to love, from pity to compassion, from being selfish, taking to be a giver, all that was discussed. So now he's going to say why you could have purified your emotions. When it comes to expression, it should be supervised by the buddhi. So when we live in this world, practical world, though the inside should be purified with unselfishness and selflessness, and our emotions should be of pure quality, when it comes to dealing with the situations in the world, it has to be with the sanction of the intellect. That's what he's going to talk about in this portion, effects of manifestation. You got to use your buddhi in the sense, the attitude has to be good, but the moment it comes to expression, you have to use your buddhi. This is where the Pandavas faltered. Pandavas are generally good people, but they don't know how to use the buddhi. So they are very predictable. Later on he's going to talk about all this. He's going to say that they come into the passive category. You've got to be thinking aggressive person. Aggressive not physically. Aggressive meaning one who uses the buddhi and functions. So it's not enough being good. You've got to be aggressively good. You've got to understand the situation and then express your emotions. Otherwise you'll be taken for a ride. So it is important to purify, but when it comes to expression, you've got to move around with your eyes open, with your buddhi directing you, not become emotional. Many times, the thought may be good, but it may produce opposite result. You know, you have to be very careful. That's what he's saying here. Continue, please. Effects of manifestation. Topic: effects of manifestation in the sixth chapter, strength of emotion. Who would like to read? Anyone wants to read?
I can read, Guruji.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Effects of manifestation. A feeling directed to a head.
Guruji, I think we've not finished Charitina. We left.
I think we've got 2-3 paras of charity left, page 117.
For sure?
Yes. Be digital where wealth accumulates, men decay.
Men decay.
Last time.
What is it? Okay. Sorry. So then, so when that quotation, he gives Oliver Goldsmith's quotation, where wealth accumulates, men decay. So the decay is nothing to do with becoming rich. It is to do with the tendency to hoard. You know, the tendency to hoard, he says, is the problem. When he says, where wealth accumulates, men decay. As if accumulating wealth is the end all and be all of life. That should not be the way in which a human being should live. All that Vedanta says is, lead a life of service and sacrifice. Whatever comes out of it, you enjoy life. Like in the Bhagavad Gita it says, sattvic person is one who eats the remnants of sacrifice. After having given to the society, dedicating your actions for the welfare of the world, whatever comes, with that you live your life. So, that is not what he calls as accumulation. That is goal-focused living. And as a result, there may be a lot of surplus, what we call a spillover. And that also you put back for the welfare of the world. You understand? That way you won't decay. But if you have a tendency to hold, accumulate, as if accumulating acquisition is the end all and be all of life, such a person decays. Firstly, he or she has decayed mentally. As a result, the quality of life also will slowly, slowly deteriorate. He will or she will lose the peace of mind, lose the harmony around. They won't have the harmony around. They will lose it. So, slowly, slowly, they will finally lose what they have accumulated also. People leave them. They feel very lonely. And ultimately, they lose that wealth also. That's why they say after a few generations, it goes. You know. So, therefore, he says, you must function in the spirit of dispassion, renunciation. If there is attachment, you deteriorate. If there is detachment, you enjoy. Continue, please.
Charity, therefore, is not merely an objective dispensation of wealth. Rather, it encompasses a subjective mental disposition to give, to serve, to sacrifice, being socially conscious of others' needs in life. When such social consciousness prevails in the human race, there can be no poverty and no need for social work and social organization. But the world is starved of this vital consciousness. Instead, people are self-centered and resort to selfish means of exploiting the passively innocent masses, resulting in disparity of wealth and poverty everywhere. Not realizing this intrinsic cause of poverty, well-intended philanthropists, stung by emotional ecstasies, resort to bouts of social service without a clue of the role of social consciousness in society.
I think we have done all this anyway, it doesn't matter. So, in this paragraph, the next three paragraphs, all he is trying to say is, while it is important you develop the attitude of service, be charitable, you need to understand that social work is not a solution. In fact, majority of poverty is created by the greed of the rest of the society. Like Mahatma Gandhiji says, there is enough in this world for the need of people, but not for the greed of people. You understand? Therefore, if you have the attitude of giving, in fact, there is another quotation, I think again by Oliver Goldsmith only, says, nakedness of this world can be clothed with the trimmings of the vein. Due to our vanity, we keep on accumulating. Just the frills, if it's cut and given, it can solve the nakedness problem of the world. It can clothe so many people. So, the mind, how much ever you feed the mind, it is not, it will not be contented. It will seek more and more and more. So as a result, we give into our mind's demands and then we start hoarding. And then we create poverty. And then little bit social service here and there we do. Social work and try to solve problems. How is it possible? So therefore he says, there are people who due to their laziness and stupidity, they will continue to be poor. That's a different thing. But many times we see the tendency to hoard is there in the human beings. In animals you don't see this. Only in human beings you see this. As a result you create poverty and then you go and do social service. So he says, Firstly, you should have social consciousness. That is what you need to develop. Once you develop social consciousness, then anything you do will be in the interest of the world. You won't be the reason for the poverty. Like Jesus Christ says, you know, iniquity there shall be. Woe unto you if you be the cause of it. If you gain this knowledge, you won't be the cause of it. But today you are the very cause of poverty. And then you are applying balm by doing little social service, social work. You know, so that's what he's saying. No need for social work and social organizations if social consciousness prevails in human race. But the world is starved of its vital, of this vital consciousness. Instead, people are self-centered. So what is social consciousness? Tera namera. That is social consciousness. What is the attitude in majority of the people today? Mera, not tera. That's it. So therefore, first we need to build the social consciousness. And that will be possible only when we understand the deeper layers of our personality and start identifying with the deeper layers. The more our identification is at the grosser level, the lesser social consciousness we'll have and the lesser social work we'll do. If at all we'll do the social work, that will also be an embellishment. It won't be true service. See, what is real service? Service means action minus ego. The majority of the social work is done with tremendous ego. More than the work that is done, the focus is on the doer. I am doing it. So therefore, he says, they resort to selfish means of exploiting the passively innocent masses, resulting in disparity of wealth. See, this topic is a little, what do you say? Sometimes I might have to be a little blunt. I have no interest in harming anybody or hurting anybody. But once or twice when they invited me in certain organizations and the topic happened to be on these lines, in that context I mentioned, I did clarify to them, but then it's the same thing what he's saying. Employees are exploited, but they're doing CSR work. I didn't talk with reference to that organization in particular. Generally, I'm saying, supposing there is an organization where you are squeezing your employees, you are exploiting their, exploiting them. And then, a lot of profit is there, and then 2% of the government says you have to do CSR. So you do CSR. People in your own organization are suffering. What service can we do really outside? It is all springing not from the depth. So that's what Swamiji is talking about here. So, after exploiting, resulting in disparity of wealth and poverty everywhere, not realizing this intrinsic cause of poverty, well-intended philanthropists, stung by emotional ecstasies, resort to bouts of social service, without a clue of the role of social consciousness in society. What he says is, it's like every day hoisting the national flag. But all anti-national activities you are involved in, smuggling, drug trafficking, these kind of activities you are involved in. But every day you will hoist the flag, salute the flag, all that you will do. This is what he's saying. You are talking about social service, but core of your personality, if it is selfish, what social service can you do? Therefore, first build social consciousness. And I have identification. Will I take more than what is necessary? I will not. Why should I take more than what is necessary and then do service? It is greater service that you do when you don't take more than what is necessary. whether you have started an NGO and do service or not, at least don't take more than what is necessary. No? But such people are not known. Other fellows may be known because they're going and doing something. A real service is firstly understand. Have I contributed for this? If I have not contributed for it, I should not touch it. Continue.
Social service is indeed a noble trait, but not at the expense of developing social consciousness among people. Every human being must be educated in the spirit of social consciousness. That is to empathize, serve, share, and harmonize with fellow beings. The concept of social consciousness ought to be introduced at the level of primary schools for children to grow with the noble trait. And families practice it in their homes from the very beginning. Charity begins at home. When the spirit of social consciousness prevails in a community, there will be no need for social service.
So, we got to introduce this value of social consciousness from the childhood. You know, that's why in the Gita he says, the way in which the leaders live, the parents live, accordingly the children will live. So therefore he says, it's a noble trait, but not at the expense of developing social consciousness. And this should be introduced in schools for children to grow with that noble trait. You know, children should be taught, they should understand that there are so many people in this world not able to get even one meal a day. And then when they show these documentaries in Ethiopia and all, it's really sad what man has made out of man. It's incredible. You know, we invade countries, plunder their wealth. What are we going to do with all that? So, that's what he's saying. You must have empathy. You must understand that this is one world, one family. We all need to live and let live. In fact, if you understand really, let live, then only you can live. Even if you don't go to that level, at least understand that others are also living in this world. There's so much greed in everything, there is greed. They go for fishing, they use all kinds of equipment and fish. What generally a normal fisherman can fish for 10 days, these fellows use the machinery and fish in one day. What kind of greed is this? You know, this is the problem in everything. So that's what he's trying to say. And then you go and do some charity. Rather than that, you don't take more than what is necessary. Start the practice. In fact, simple practices like, you know, when there is a buffet meal and you are hungry, it's okay. You wait for everyone to take, then you go and take. You develop the trait. It gives tremendous joy. It's not for joy you should do that, but actually you will get joy if you practice such, you know, habits. Slowly, slowly you will see a tremendous joy comes. You have a lot of control over your own personality and you will not take whatever is there, you take. So, that's why he says charity begins at home. It should start from childhood. We should develop that awareness. We have come into this world, everything is provided for all of us, not just for me. It is provided for every one of us. Otherwise, would we pollute the air, would we pollute the rivers? It's very, very interesting, you know, what we do. You may be going to give a talk in an NGO, but while you are going in the car, you are drinking Coca-Cola and throwing the bottle outside. But you are going to give a talk in an NGO. This is the level of awareness that all of us, majority has. That's why he says, you know, first develop that awareness, then you can go and talk. You actually don't have to talk, you just listen. Continue, please.
Philanthropists, with all their social work, can only create pockets of relief while the perennial problem of poverty persists. The problem should be addressed through mass education and dissemination of social consciousness to individuals. Vedanta, the ancient philosophy of India, educates and inculcates this spirit of social consciousness in human beings. That should remove the curse of poverty on them. There is abundance of wealth in the world. People have only to drop their self-centeredness and recognize the needs of others.
So all he's trying to say is, the person should be given the knowledge of Vedanta from a very young age. When the person understands that essentially all of us are the divinity expressing in different forms, then naturally whatever that person will do will be charity. It will be with tremendous awareness, with oneness. That's all he says. First inculcate social consciousness, then whatever they do will be social things. Firstly, there won't be much of need for social work. Very little need will be there. Because firstly, people will understand that they themselves will have to be dynamic. So you will help them out. You know, to stand on their feet with the knowledge. They'll become independent and they'll be serving to cater to the society. That's all it is. That should remove the cause of poverty on them. Rather than trying to solve the symptom, solve the solution, solve the basic source, is it? The basic source of poverty, what is it? Selfishness. Even fellows who are lazy, lethargic, who will not contribute, what is it? It is because of their selfishness. I want to be a bloodsucker. The rest of the fellows will work, his fellow will eat. That is another extreme form of selfishness. Then there is next stage in which majority of us belong to. You know, we are not that extreme. But the next stage is, we are not bloodsuckers, but at the same time, we act everything selfishly for ourselves only. So the root is selfishness. And that is because we do not know anything higher. We only know about this body, mind, intellect, maximum family. So, we all function from that level. The moment you gain the knowledge of Vedanta, you begin to understand the deeper layers of your personality, and then when you go to the depth and understand that Atma and all that, then the way you will function will be different. Therefore, he says, first you got to strengthen the roots. Then the tree will automatically bear the fruits. Why are we in a hurry for the results? Strengthen the roots. The roots should go deeper into the soil. So he says Vedanta knowledge is a must. We need to inculcate this knowledge. See, in other context, we say in the organizations also, people use the stick and carrot method to draw the work out of them. You know, keep on feeding them with a lot of incentives. Now, there is no limit. The more you give, the more they will want. So ideally, when you introduce this knowledge of Vedanta at their level you introduce only Karma Yoga maximum. Beyond that, you don't go into the organizations. Same Vedanta, when we give it to organizations, it's more on Karma Yoga. Sometimes we use the word Karma Yoga, we don't use the word Karma Yoga. But that's what we talk. When people begin to understand that, in them there is no need for incentive. They'll be working out of inspiration. You can't immediately remove the incentive because you've given them, they've been tasting it. You can't completely remove it. While you slowly, slowly educate them on the higher, when insights start becoming fuller and fuller, their begging attitude changes. You understand? The inside has to be filled first. All of us are deep inside, empty. There's a big lacuna. So, Vedantic knowledge fills you. It satisfies you within. Once you are full within, you will automatically be a giver. You work out of inspiration. You will come to organization saying, what can I do for you? What can I give to the organization today? Not with an attitude that what will the organization give to me today? Are there any new incentive schemes? You know? So all the time we'll think like that. What can I get? What can I get? What can I get? So when the knowledge goes in, you will be driven by inspiration. Not by any incentive. No need. So slowly, slowly the inside has to be made paripurna. The inside is weak, empty. We take. We create poverty. We become the source of poverty. That's all it is. See, this discussion I had with somebody else. In India, if you see, in majority of the places, people buy lands in faraway places. Because after some time, the value will go up as an investment. Chalo, theek hai, that time you bought, it was nothing. Now, so many industries have come in that area. So many people are trying to settle there. But you are still not selling your land. Why? Neither are you building and renting any property there for people to go and live. Nor are you selling because you are waiting for it to go up further. Now in what way is it correct? You are doing everything legal. Nothing illegal you are doing. It's legal only. But it is like, you know, when there is a need for tomato, you holding so that the price goes up and then you will sell. It is not as if you do not have a house or anything. You have probably nothing to do with that country or that land. It is not useful for the fellows who are living there. At least you build a house there and rent it out. At least that is okay. You will not do that also. Everything has to be only profit motive, profit motive, profit motive. And then you will say, I am doing everything legal. If you argue from the legal point of view, I have nothing to say. But is it correct? If you think about it, are you not holding? You are not giving an opportunity for the other fellow. This land we have come for transactional purposes, certain things have been made. But why do we have to do like this? The social awareness is not there. That's all he is saying, you know. Once you get social awareness, you do not want to hoard in any way. You do not want to hoard in any way. That hoarding, you say on one hand, I'm a devotee of God. And you want to hoard. This belongs to Bhagavan. First understand this. Everything in this universe belongs to Bhagavan. Nothing is yours or mine. Temporarily we are given. So if you are buying some land somewhere, whatever, put that for use for others, then it's okay. Just, that's all I'm saying. That's all Vedanta is saying, not even I'm saying. You've done that, okay, good. Use it for the society, then it's fine. But with an idea that it will grow up and then I'll make money out of it and you're not helping anybody in the present, it is hoarding. That mentality if you have, it is because you're empty within. If you're full, you can't do that. You just think about it. And all of us do that in some context or the other. Because to the extent we are empty inside, we do that. To the extent you are full, you will not do that. Not possible. Therefore, he says there is abundance of wealth in this world. People will have to drop only their self-centeredness and recognize the need of others. There is abundance of wealth. See, the other day I was reading a lot of articles and listening to certain debates about this Wayanad disaster that happened in Kerala. Huh? Recently, I've been to Coimbatore, so I spoke to some people there because it's closer to Wayanad. Because it's a nice tourist spot, slowly, slowly, fellows went and built a lot of resorts, destroyed the native trees there, brought in some other trees, which cannot help in blocking the landslides. It is not as if only because of that. All because of human beings' greed. Incredible. You don't know. I don't know what all we'll do. Incredible. No animals do this. And then we'll talk about Vedanta. All big, big things we talk. So many people lost their lives, livelihood and lives in Wayanad. I don't know whether we've learned lessons. No, it's a beautiful place. We have to build one resort. So we displace people, we displace just mind's greed. And then maybe a little bit guilt feeling is there. So you also do something so that it handles the guilt. That's all we want. We want our guilt to be handled. We really don't see from the other person's point of view. So learning to see from the totality point of view. That's all. Learn to see from the totality point. Is there any lack of wealth in this world? It is enough wealth. But there is not enough for the greed of the people. People have only to drop their self-centeredness and recognize the needs of the others. That doesn't mean you make them lazy by feeding them free. But to make them work and earn their living, make them strong, because that's the true service. While all that is there, do not be selfish and grab, you know, as much as possible. Continuing, effects of manifestation. She's not there. I think she's...
Sandhya's connection is gone.
I think Sandhya, yeah, the connection is gone.
Wi-Fi.
Somebody else please read. Who wants to read? Effects of manifestation.
I don't have my book with me today. I'm not at home.
Okay, let's not waste time now. Shweta,
I can read. Okay, Shweta is reading. Shweta, read.
You read, no problem. Read.
Effects of manifestation. A feeling directed to a high ideal is noble. Your attitude to serve and sacrifice is indeed commendable. They are fine emotions which embellish your personality. Nevertheless, Vedanta cautions you against the adverse effects of manifesting them indiscriminately. However chaste an emotion be, it would be unwise to express it without intellectual direction. An unintelligent manifestation of even a good emotion may bring about a negative result. For example, you may love all creatures alike, appreciate and admire their individual beauty and grandeur. Yet, you cannot express your feelings for them in the same way. You may pick up a kitten and caress it, but you would not do that to a serpent. Do I read on?
Continue, please, yeah.
You may love your spouse dearly, but you cannot afford to express your emotion indiscriminately at all times. If you do so, it would cause nausea to the other. The relationship may end in bitterness, perhaps a separation. A parable explains the effect of unwise expression of emotion. A serpent lived in the outskirts of a village. It was a menace to the villagers. It attacked and poisoned many of them. One day, a sage passed that way. The serpent charged out of its hideout. It was about to strike. The sage stood unperturbed. The assailant recognized the divine person and begged his pardon. The good man advised it not to be hateful and cruel and create so much disharmony. The serpent repented its aggression and vowed to live peacefully. Days later, the sage returned to the same way. and found the creature lacerated with wounds. He inquired as to the cause of its pathetic state. The serpent replied ungrudgingly, "Sir, I merely followed your wise counsel, expressed my love to one and all. The villagers pelted me with stones and brought me to this condition." The wise man rejoined, "I'm sorry, I have not conveyed my message properly. I did ask you to live in harmony with others, but not to express your love indiscriminately. Without a feeling of hatred, you should have hissed and driven them away. So it is with life. You must learn to manifest your inner feelings with discretion, with caution. Your intellect must ever be alert to direct your emotions into proper channels. This is intelligent living."
So, in other words, the moment it comes to expression in the world, it has to be filtered through the intellect. That's all he's saying. In short, in these three paragraphs of this topic, effects of manifestation, you can have good feelings. There are a lot of people say, "Oh, you are trying to, you know, tell us to be very, very good people. If I become such an employer, nobody will work in the office." You know, that is not what he's saying. You have to, in fact, make them work and earn their salary. There is no doubt in that. But then, what about your attitude? Your attitude should not be to grab what belongs to them. Your attitude should be to share, to give. But each one has to work. You cannot allow your emotions to take over. This is exactly what Pandavas did. They allowed their emotions to take over. Lot of us have this problem. I can't say no. They suffer. How can I say no? They're good people. They're asking. How can I say no? If you understand that what they're asking for is not a good thing, don't have to give. But you don't have the intellectual strength to say no. Therefore you suffer. It gives all these stories and all that. The example of animals, you know, you may love the ferocious tiger as well as the deer, but you will only go closer to the deer, not closer to the tiger. So you must understand everybody's nature is different. You cannot encourage their laziness. You cannot encourage their indulgences. That you should not do. But people do that in the name of giving. What you've done is you've encouraged their indulgences, you've encouraged their laziness. That is not amounting to charity. That is just expression of your weak emotions. Some attachment you have, so you do that. So therefore he says, no, you should have a strong buddhi. The moment you have good emotion and there is a situation, you've got to apply it in the context and then do it. So in certain cases, not giving becomes the true giving. In certain cases, not giving becomes true giving. Oh, no, no, no. How can I say no? 2-3 times they have come. No. 2-3 times they have come. So 25,000 times also they will come. So what's your problem? You are giving it because you have weakness. They know that. They exploit you. If you are strong, you can build strong society around you. If you are weak, you will build only weakness around you. People do this with children also. You will earn for their great-grandchildren, make them lazy. As if you have an obligation to do all that for them. You make them strong by giving them a strong intellect, educate them properly, expose them to be independent, to strong within. These things you do and leave them alone. But you keep giving them so much that the fellow will become lazy only. What else he'll become? Is that true giving? So what have you done? Out of your attachment, my child, therefore you do. And you destroy the fellow. Because you express the emotion without intellect's guidance. Without intellect's guidance. When you express the emotion with intellect's guidance, then it will build relationship. In the beginning, it may be, there may be slight issues in the beginning. Especially with the weaker fellow. Because a weaker fellow will not understand. But slowly, as that fellow starts gaining strength, begins to understand and appreciate, yes, my father was this way with me. Because of that, I am strong today. Yes, my spouse was behaving this way with me. It is good for me only. You will understand. In the beginning, it will be tough. But you must have the strength to go through that phase. In relationship, this is what happens. So that's why he says it has to be properly filtered through the buddhi and expressed. Otherwise, you will suffer. So that beautiful story of the sage, he tells the snake not to kill them, bite them. But yes, because following that advice, which the snake obviously didn't understand fully, then the situation was that they beat the snake so much that the snake would die. So then he said, I only told you not to bite. Did I tell you not to hiss? No. You must understand that everyone will function according to their gunas. You should never help increasing their rajas and tamas. Your giving should help them promote their satya, not rajas and tamas. Today what we are doing is we are promoting rajas and tamas. When you are promoting rajas and tamas, what kind of service is that? How can you call that service? That is not service, no? So that's all he says. Be like that sage. Learn to hiss when you have to hiss. There is beautiful attitude of giving. But you don't express your giving purely with the attitude. After the attitude, the next step is, before manifesting, check with your buddhi. Is this correct? Is this the way we have to do? Then you are making the person strong. Even that person is still not grown to that height, they may not understand. But as they grow and become stronger, they will be grateful to you. Continue. Root of emotion.
Sorry. Root of emotion. An emotion springs from a flow of thoughts. Your thoughts flow towards the world constantly. The thought flow arises from a sense of unfulfillment, uncompleteness, imperfection felt within you. This notion of a lacuna, void, is caused by the ignorance of yourself. Your real self within is supreme, absolute. The rare one realizes the self, attains the state of absolute fulfillment. But humanity everywhere is ignorant of the self. Hence, every human feels a void within. The void causes thoughts to run into the world for fulfillment, just as they run towards food when the stomach is empty. Thus your thoughts constantly reach out into the world for fulfilling a sense of unfulfillment, completing an uncompleteness, perfecting an imperfection felt within. The stream of thoughts flowing from you to the objects of the world is known as desire, kama. Desire, therefore, is caused by ignorance of your supreme self. The enlightened, who has gained the knowledge of self, alone is free from desire. Until you reach the state of self-realization, you will entertain desires. And desires go through several modifications.
He is analyzing what is the source of emotion or root of emotion, how it comes about. So he says, first and foremost, our original nature is divinity, which is infinite, complete. But when we are ignorant of our original nature, we think we are lacking. There is, because we don't understand that we are infinite. We don't understand that we are complete. So we feel that we are incomplete. To fulfill that void, which is imaginary, of course, to fulfill that void of incompleteness, our thoughts run from us to the world outside. When the thoughts run from us to the world outside, that thoughts running in the initial stage is called attachment, then it's called desire. And when desire further modifies, all emotions come. That's what he's explaining. When the desire is there, unfulfilled will cause anger. Not unfulfilled. Unfulfilled will not cause anger. Interrupted will cause anger. Unfulfilled will cause agitation. So anger is an emotion. How does it come? When it's interfered. And then greed comes when you want more. Fear comes when you are afraid of losing what you have achieved. Arrogance comes when you compare yourself with others who are less than you. Jealous comes when you compare yourself with those who are more than you. All these emotions spring from what? Ignorance of your true nature. So, the root cause of emotion is desire, and the desire's root cause is ignorance. That's all he's saying. From ignorance of the self comes desire. The desire modifies into various emotions. That's all he's saying. Continue, please.
Desire is thought flow. Desire is thought flow. When one continues to feel it, the flow thickens. The thicker stream of thoughts develops into greed. Into greed, avarice known as lobha. If, however, the flow is intercepted by an object or being, the thoughts get deflected. The deflected thought current is called anger, krodha. Consider, for example, Tom loves Elizabeth. Tom's thoughts run towards Elizabeth. Another suitor, John, also loves her. John's courting intercepts Tom's thought flow. Tom develops anger towards John. Anger, therefore, is a modification of desire. There can be no anger unless there is an underlying desire. Hence, to overcome anger, you need to locate the desire and eliminate it. To control and reduce your desires, you must examine your thought flow. When a thought alights on an object or being, let your intellect observe it at the very beginning. Scrutinize it. Accept or reject it with discretion. If you follow this procedure, there can be no indiscriminate thought flow. No desire formation. Your intellect, therefore, must be well developed and alert to avoid such indiscriminate flow of thoughts. If, however, the intellect is weak, you would develop desire, greed. And since the world cannot always cater to your desires, you become angry at the obstacles you face. As desire, greed and anger would get into delusion, moha. Your emotions mounting up to this stage develop into arrogance, mada, at those below your level of achievements and envy, matsarya, at those above your level. And when you manage to maintain a level of success in your achievement, in the world you entertain fear, bhaya. You are afraid of losing what you have gained. Thus, a host of emotions invades your personality. They lead you to grief, misery. Perhaps to your ultimate destruction if left unattended, while desire remains the cause of this confusion and chaos.
So basically, desire is the root of all emotions. And the root of desire is ignorance of your true self. And the desire is fulfilled, you want more, you develop greed, lobha. When the desire is interrupted, you develop anger, krodha. When the desire is fulfilled and you have greed, there is also simultaneously fear of losing, bhaya. And when you compare yourself with those who have more than you, you have arrogance. When you compare yourself with those who have less than you develop jealousy, envy, matsarya. And then all this will cause delusion in you, moha. You know, you don't know what you are doing once you are caught up in the desire, once you are caught up in the anger. Out of anger, people do all kinds of things. in Delhi, road rage discussion goes on very often in the newspapers. You see just some small scratch in the car. They get out and start fighting and they kill. Fellow is murdered. You end up in jail for a few years. How did that happen? You have a desire. Somebody interpret the desire. That's it. You are completely deluded. You do not know what you did, what you are doing. People go to that extent of killing each other. Destroying. That's all he says. Therefore, they lead you to grief, misery. Perhaps your ultimate destruction is left unattended. So what do you have to do? This is what Bhagavad Gita teaches. He uses the word vega. You know what he says is, when the stream is small or beginning, that time itself become aware, control it and give it a direction. If not, when it thickens, it becomes very difficult thereafter. Very difficult. Like when you're playing cricket on your terrace, you hit the ball through the staircase. And if you can go and grab the ball when it is bouncing on the top, step, you're okay. Otherwise, next it will go to the 5th. After that, it will go to the 25th. After that, 225th. You cannot catch it. So therefore, before it develops into a velocity, you got to grasp it. So when you moment you become aware, first step is becoming aware. And second step is giving it a direction. This is how you overcome your anger and many things. First you have to become aware. If you are not aware, you can do nothing about it. The moment you become aware, you start giving it a higher direction. Then you can overcome your emotions. Otherwise you will be completely overpowered by your emotions. Continue please.
Desires, besides developing into their modifications, also multiply in numbers like bacteria. They plague the mind with agitation and sorrow. All through life, the human mind moves from one desire to another, trying to find fulfillment. No sooner a desire is satisfied, many others spring forth. Thus, you become bound, burdened with innumerable desires. You will have therefore to use the intellect constantly to check and control them. You achieve this by pitching up an ideal in life. An ideal is a cause, a goal beyond your self-centered, selfish interest in the world. If your motive is merely to cater to the welfare of yourself and your immediate family, you breed more desires. But when you entertain an ideal in life, your desire is directed to the higher. Then the desires for the lower vein. Thus, raise the ideal for as illustrated. From oneself gradually to family, to community, and to the world at large. As the quality of the desire becomes subtler, the quantity of the desire diminishes. The ultimate mission of life is to realize the self, when all desires dissolve into the Supreme Self. The unrelenting law of nature is that you get what you deserve, not what you desire. Practice this law in life. Deserve, never desire. Rise above desire, the objects of the world seek you. Whereas you start desiring, craving for anything, the objects of your desire elude you. The Holy Bible states, seek and it shall be given to you. Knock and it shall be opened up unto you. That is the law. It is a great message to humanity. Seek the kingdom of God. Seek the self within. Everything seeks you.
So, another problem with desire is, like bacteria, it multiplies if it's not checked. Bacteria, you know, 1 becomes 2, 2 becomes 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, it goes on. So, exactly like that, when desires are not checked and directed by the intellect, it multiplies further. It grows in intensity also, it grows in numbers also, and it modifies also. So, this is the bigger problem. And this is what is happening in all of us. So, therefore he says, how do you control this desire? The whole thing is called life management. Desire management, work management, stress management, all these things. The root is managing desire. Relationship, everything finally comes to managing your desire. Nobody teaches you this. Everywhere they teach many other things. But nobody teaches how to manage this desire. So he says, you have to give it a higher direction. If you give a direction to your desire, it becomes a goal, ambition. As you give a higher direction, the desire, when it becomes subtler, at the gross level, majority of the desires fall. You rise slowly. A lot of people, without understanding this, they starve their desire. In the name of self-control, they starve the desire and then actually they increase it more. Therefore, he says, no, you must pitch up a higher ideal in life. And then we say ideal in Vedanta, something beyond your selfish, self-centered interest. Work for a family, like he shows in the diagram, you know. Instead of you, work for the family. Then raise it to community, humanity, all species, etc. So thus will you function. He says, the lower desires win away. That's the idea. When you entertain an ideal in life, your desire is directed to the higher. Then the desires for the lower slowly wane away. Thus rise the ideal as illustrated and finally come to the ideal of self. You serve the self, not the ego. Today our actions are serving the ego. Once you gain the knowledge, you will start serving the truth, the reality. So he says the ultimate mission of life is to realize the self and all desires dissolve into the supreme self. The unrelenting law of nature is that you get what you deserve, not what you desire. What is this deserving? I've explained this before in another context. Deserving means rising above the desire. In the world, everything gets attracted to something that has no demands or less demand. The moment you have demand, things leave you. In the sense, if you constantly beg, ask, give me, it leaves you. The moment you leave it, it comes to you. The mind also frees and then you attract. You repulse it when you crave. You attract it when you live it. So the idea is, be clear in your head what you want. Leave that and work for the higher. This comes to you. I'll explain this in detail next week. It also explains that with a poem, Olive Tree. It's a beautiful poetry. We will take this up next week. You get what you deserve, not what you desire. What does this statement deserve mean? We'll understand that next time. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Buddhyatmanava Prakate Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarpayami. Hari Om.